Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be with you this evening. I think we got a lot on the dock. So here's the thing. It's like Mike's right. I was convicted last week because my yes isn't a yes. I say we're going to look at articles, and then like I get to blabbing on about stuff, and God forbid Boova starts getting on some kind of subject. And between the two of us, we had 45 minutes chatty Cathy-ing about a bunch of jazz, and we don't get into the articles that I've prepared.
Yeah.
So I call this Making It Right Monday. we're gonna hit up some of these articles that I said we were going to talk about that we haven't been talking about. So here's a couple that I found. There was one that Lindgren sent us, and it was 10 toxic Christians in the church today.
I thought it was only six.
No, there's 10 of them.
Man, there's way too many of them.
You look around, boys. They're everywhere. And here's the deal: the more guys that are on the list, the more likely that you're one of them, and that's rough times.
Boy, that's junk.
I know. So heads up, you might be a toxic Christian.
Does it say anything about people who e-smoke? Because I'd like to stay.
No, not mentioned. No. I only got through the first seven as I was perusing the article. So
all right, I'll probably say
you could be number eight.
The guy in the picture is wearing a gas mask, so who knows?
It could be, right.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I actually saw something that said smoking trends are up. Because e-smokes are cool. Mm-hmm.
Are they considered like viably hip? Like people dig on them?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Every band we have come through here, they have, not only do they e-smoke, but like they like make their own stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like they brew it up. They used to be in the van, but now they get the guy, whatever local tobacco man that they know to like make their own flavor, and then they send them out. Like it's way cool. It's the hip thing to do. It's got to be better than smoking the stinky analogs, you know what I'm saying?
It might be the cancer still.
Yeah, that's probably.
I don't know.
That's unproven.
Something to think about. Anyway, so 10 toxic Christians in the church today, and I saw an article. There was a group, and I think this happened already, a group to unveil Satan statue in Detroit during largest public satanic ceremony in history.
Oh, yeah, I saw an article on this thing.
Did you see the statue, though?
Yeah. This is hilarious. as much as Warner Brothers wants to convince you that it's like a pitchfork to, you know, clown-looking Satan, these guys have, like, way overdone it with this paganistic goat face. and he's ripped, you know, like he's pagan.
Yeah.
And then Schwarzenegger on the bottom half.
Nice.
And then he's got some kind of spear. And, like, I don't even know where they pulled the reference of what he looks like from, but it's outrageous.
No, and that was part of my, and I'll read through the article, but like, part of the outpouring of this statue, I mean, like, it would be to put to life something where I would look at it and go, like, there's no way. There's no way that has any relevancy in my life. It's so goofy looking. And it was just weird. And so as I was reading the article, I thought, well, it's just interesting to think, how do you get there? or what are you looking for? So anyway, I'll read through the article. We'll kind of take a peek on that. There's a story on the Independent Journal Review today about two girls who sitting behind a woman at a baseball game. And she was sexting to somebody, and her husband was next to her, and her husband was not receiving text messages. And so they outed her on social media. Like, they took pictures of it and told the husband, and so there's kind of a debate as to, like, is that appropriate? Like, was it their place to do that kind of thing?
How did they know she wasn't with a boyfriend and she was sexting her husband?
That actually seems possible based upon the reaction of the man.
Oh.
So anyway, I'll read through this article and we'll tell me, like, what's the right way to handle this?
This is the classic symptom of a man, though. You know what I'm saying? He's like, she's at a baseball game, but literally paying no attention to what's going on around him. Ooh, the baseball. You know what I'm saying?
A woman has a bunch of naked pictures of herself on her phone.
His wife is doing all kinds of crazy. Like, if this was a metaphor for a ladies' movement, be like, you know, I'm sitting here literally cheating on you right next to you, and you go, hey, I wonder if we have any money for hot dogs.
There was a strike. What?
Seriously.
Yeah, his reaction is classic. Actually, Dan, I hadn't even considered that. That's a good thought. All right, well, I'll read through that article and see how it goes.
Okay.
So anyway, those are the articles I got kicking off the way. I think we've got some more up in the caddy if we need it. We got some Dear Life in the Path. Mike, you scan them at all?
Yeah, I checked them out.
And they're pretty good?
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see how the gallery handles them.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that's what we got.
We've got some guests in the studio.
We do. So here's the deal. You hear me talk about them all the time. I say, call Bob. I said, you're going to call Bob. You're going to buy and sell your house. Or if you're thinking about it, call Bob. Don't ask us. We don't know what we're doing.
That's why we know Bob.
That's right. And so Bob and John Eisenhower have joined us in the studio again. And always fun to have these fellas in. And it's classic having them out for the buffet night.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. The Life in the Path buffet night is double amped when the Eisenhower team shows up. I mean, it was just great.
Here's the deal. Last time we went, I was blown away at Bill's dessert techniques. Like, he built this like dessert. I would call it like a volcano is what I would call it. It had like five things on it, and it was well done. And I sat down, and I looked at it, and I said, "Bill, what is this thing?" And he proceeded to explain it to me like he's been doing the same thing for years. but anyway, me and the kids were blown away. We had to go. We tried to recreate it, but never could quit. Quite the same magic that Bill had done on the first pass.
There was some pizzazz in that dessert bowl. But I tell you this with all certainty, no one does buffet nights better than a combination of Life in the Path and the Eisenhower team.
No, it's in fact, we're going to set another one up, and we're going to invite you guys. Now, don't get all excited. It's Dutch treat. You know what I'm saying? I'd like to say that we can foot the bill, but it's just not going to happen, boys. It's 10 o'clock on a Monday night. We're on the internet. We're not paying for your dinner.
Yeah.
But we'd love your community. Come out and be community with us.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, hey, Bob has recently gotten married. Bob, how is internet-friendly married life treating you?
Oh, it's paradise. Yeah, this is great. I just wondered why I waited so long.
Yeah.
It's been good.
That's an excellent answer.
Yeah.
Said every girlfriend of the bride ever.
That's right, yeah.
was there any piece of advice that someone gave you about like coming into marriage that you, at this point in your relationship, you can say, yes, that was excellent advice, or, you know what, no, I should reject that whole out of hand?
Don't try and explain reason or logic, you know. That works in a lot of situations, but yeah. In married life, it doesn't always work. Just go with it.
You smile and nod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else said, you can be right or you can be happy, but you can't be both. So I'm learning that really quick.
That sounds right.
Yeah. That's a radio station I can tune into.
Yeah.
here's what I, honest to goodness, what I found is that like I could have the dead sharpest answer. I could be right and I could explain it well. And in this room, it would be a compelling discussion and we'd all have it and we'd come to a reasonable conclusion. And I will give that same explanation to my wife. And it's not that she doesn't understand it. And it's not that I didn't explain it right, but like halfway through, I feel like I've dumbed down. Like I'm immediately less confident about my answer, and because I know her better, when she's certain looks in her face, I'm like, oh no, she's not
buying into
this.
She's not
buying this.
Have I made no sense at all?
No, shoot. And like I like that woman can strip away any false bravado that I may have built into a conversation. And here's the deal. So, like, if I'm really sure about something, I will generally run it through her.
Yeah.
Because, like, she is a good filter for me to know whether I've bought too far into something or whether, like, I've overcommitted. In fact, a lot of stuff I did, I was doing a class about the end times earlier today, and, like, I talked about a lot of that with her, and it filtered a lot of stuff out that I would not say again.
Yeah.
Just because, like, it just knowing someone like that is a very good filter to know what is really you and what is you putting on some sort of show, whether you intend to or not. And, like, The right guy embraces that instead of running from it.
Yeah.
I think every guy's story where they all sit around and they're like, oh yeah, that's how it is generally a bunch of guys that are running from that as opposed to embracing it and saying, you know what? Yeah, that woman can level me.
Yeah.
And I need that. So yeah. If you found the right woman that can level you, that's good news.
Yeah. They always say guys are really good at processing like one thing and women can process like 95 at once.
Uh-huh.
And we think they're just slow and dumb and they're just like actually looping us, lapping us like 12 times.
Yeah.
And they're going,
they're putting the whole thing together.
Point three, and they're like, yeah. Yeah.
I find this happens a lot when Ben and I decide we're going to do something. Like, I'll get off the phone with Ben and be like, all right. I said, okay, lady, here's what we're going to do. Blah, 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 blah. We're going to drive here. They're going to meet us here. And she'll go, that's the stupidest thing. Do you guys even talk about this? And then she'll, like, explain it. And there's some gaping hole that I've completely missed, which made whatever I came up with the stupidest thing ever. Yeah. I mean, legitimately, it was dumb.
Oh, yeah, the bridge is out.
And it didn't take her but like 10 seconds to go, blah, 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 blah. Why didn't you just do this? And I'm like, dang it, where were you at like a minute ago?
Yeah, shoot.
I need a conference call. You in on all my phone calls, apparently.
Yeah. I would agree with where that's coming from. I think the right, you just got to embrace that stuff. It's right.
Yeah.
It's dead on. It's right.
Here's what I'm going to do, lady. I mean, what do you think I should do, lady?
Yeah, all right.
I'm going to fix that.
some of the stories that Herrick has told about just praying through things and like using your wife as a vet as to, you know, like, are you guys coming to the same conclusion when you're both talking to God? Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the right way to run through stuff.
You have to be a little bit careful. Like my wife tends to be just naturally more cautious than I am.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of filter through. Is this just her being cautious, or is it her being smarter than me?
Yeah.
Come on, let's jump off this cliff. What's
both
the deal?
Both of which are highly possible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got to kind of weigh it. And anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there.
All right. Anyway.
Got to measure that.
I think that's. I don't know. Any other advice? Any other advice, Bob?
No other advice. I did have a question, though, for you guys.
Okay.
And I don't know if you can talk about it or not, but when we met you guys at the buffet, that was the second buffet you guys had been to, and
yeah.
And you guys were trying to judge which one was better. Was there ever a conclusion, or can you guys?
So the first one we went to was that big new buffet.
The hibachi.
Yeah.
It was way funner to say, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it was funner to say. Although I think that the place that we went the second time, I think I actually, food-wise, I liked better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did.
And great decoration.
Yeah, it's right every season. All at once.
And maybe it was just the experience, but they gave us our own place. We got our own room and stuff, and the fam was there, and the Eisenhowers were there, and it was great.
I think the second place had all the pizzazz because of the folks in attendance. Like, Pete showed up.
Pete was
there.
The
Eisenhowers were there. Everybody from our family was there. It was just, I don't know, it was like going to a faux Thanksgiving dinner at a Chinese restaurant.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's what it felt like. You know, just a bunch of family folks show up, and you just kind of go around the room talking to everybody. I think it really had everything to do with the people that showed.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm confused about that is the second one actually seemed a little bit larger, even though Hibachi is going around claiming to be the largest buffet in Iowa.
Yeah, I think you should call on that. That seems like a technical. They got to be like surface area or something.
Yeah, I think they can just scoot like the aisles with the food in them away farther and say, like, square foot wise, we're just bigger, mm-hmm. right? I could just have two trays and move them farther apart and say we took up more room.
Yeah, yeah, that's tricky. Anyway, we're on the hunt for the next one. Maybe the next 2 weeks, let's find another buffet location and we'll set another one up.
Okay,
I think that sounds good. All right, awesome. All right, so we are talking with Bob and John Eisenhower, and like I said, these are the guys that we send you to for all your home buying and selling needs. Like, and maybe you don't even know you're in the market. Maybe you're curious. We were talking before the show started that like. The estimate on Mike's house is way above what he thought it was.
It's not even. It's a lie. It's just an outright lie.
And Mike, don't seem right. It's too much for your
place. I looked at it, and they're like, you should sell now. Your place is worth $500,000. I'm like, it's not worth no $500,000. What do you tell? The internet lies to you. Show me one other place where the internet tells you the truth.
So here's the thing. Is like you feel yourself, you know, maybe I'm interested, maybe I'm not. I don't even know if I should be looking for a house. Do you want to know? That's when you call Bob and John. Like, they answer questions like that. They know those things, and they can tell you, well, that's legit. You know, if you're looking to sell, maybe we can help you out with that, or we can help you find another place. They're just the right guys for it.
My daughter, right this moment, we've been texting back and forth. She is ready to go. She wants his number. I said, I'll get his card.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I've said it out loud, so now you know.
Good deal.
You're in.
All right. Hey, can I ask you a real question on the on that front, fellas? So, like, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, people could just, like, walk into a house pretty much, right? Like, I'm ready, let's buy the thing, and let's do this. And then you hear, since the financial thing happened, you know, they said everything's kind of coming back on the rebound. Is that the case? Like, do you feel like in the real estate market, especially here around town, like that is the case? It's kind of bouncing back?
Yeah, it's really bounced back. You're right. About 5 years ago, you could walk into a bank and say, here's what I want. Approve me. You don't have to put anything down and show very little verification of what you make. And then we went through some...
That's how I bought that place worth $500,000 I currently have.
That's
right.
Didn't have to prove anything, did you?
You just said, trust me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then we went through some down, you know, the market went down, and you had to put a lot more money down and prove a lot more. And now that the economy and the market's better, we're getting closer to that point where you still have to put a little down, but not much. You're talking between 3 and 5% for a down payment. 3 or 5% of the purchase price, low interest rate, and
the interest rates still are kind of low.
Yeah, they're around 4%, which historically, I mean, what was the first rate you ever got when you bought a house? Do you remember? Ballpark.
I want to say 12-ish.
Yeah.
Holy cats, 12, Dan.
12%.
Yeah. I think so.
It's like living in New Zealand.
Of course, I paid $28,500 for my first house. That was a small house in that market.
You should go on the internet. It's probably worth $500,000 by now.
It might be. Yeah. I sold it for a lot more.
Yeah. So historically, 4% out of this world. So.
So there's a if you're even half considering that it's time to start checking into places or getting rid of your places, there's no reason to push it off. You at least get the information, right? Say, what do you think this thing can sell for? What do you think I can buy with it? At least you'll have some facts instead of just sitting on your couch dreaming that you may move every once in a while, and then you just back out of it without even making a phone call.
Yeah. If you're just curious, you know, even if you're a year or two away or months away from doing anything, give us a call. We'd love to give you our opinion.
So awesome. Should someone like get pre-qualified before talking to you, or do you help them with that?
Yeah, we'll help them with that.
Oh, really?
Some buyers come to us pre-qualified before they talk to us, but a lot of times they don't have a clue where to begin, you know, so they'll come to us, want to buy something, and we'll get them to that bank first or the lender first and figure out, A, are they qualified, and B, can they, you know, fit that monthly payment into their budget, and then from there we'll find them the right house and the price range they need to be in.
Cool.
I think that's the way to do it, too, because, like, I mean, I have enough stuff to do without worrying about any of that, right? Like, I don't do a bunch of legwork to pre-qualify myself and what. Like, I have a real estate guy, right? Like, I show up, like, you sell houses every day. Tell me what I need to do. And then they go, exactly. I've done this with the Eisenhowers before, right? I showed up and I said, here's what I want to buy. He said, here's what you got to do. And then that's all I did. And it was fantastic. I feel like if you're going to buy or sell a house, the easiest thing you can do is extract whatever opinion you found on Google out of it. And just call a guy that knows what he's doing.
Yeah. You know, it is like that, though. Like, we're a society that increasingly, I think, is either intentionally or unintentionally devaluing expertise.
Yes,
like,
true.
With more information doesn't necessarily create more experts. It just creates more people that are half-cocked
and
don't necessarily know what they're doing. And, like, it doesn't mean that there aren't people that are accomplishing some of those things, you know, through the information that's available. But, like, I don't know, there's still reason to use people that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because it never works. You know, you have a cough, a hangnail, and an earache, so you Google it, and you're going to die.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
It's
that's
like,
it.
Maybe they're unrelated.
You have knee cancer. Well, yeah. I didn't know knee cancer wasn't even a thing. Yeah, no, you got it, definitely.
But then we do it again.
Yeah.
We keep going back, like, well, this time it'll be right. So, just talk to someone.
Yeah, maybe you should talk to somebody who knows what they're doing.
Sounds like it'd be easier to just take advantage of a fool then.
Yeah, right. Right. At least then you'd have someone to blame it on.
This guy.
Yeah. No, I've been noticing that just kind of across the board. And, like, I've noticed that I've actually bounced the other way, where 3 or 4 years ago, my first instinct is to always, like, figure out how to solve a problem on my own or whatever. And, like, the more I get into those things, it's not that I don't think I'm capable of it, but, like, I spend less time and less money and less effort and find some guy who cares about what he's doing, who knows what he's doing, and have him help you do it. And, like, it's just a way better experience, and you end up things turning out in ways that you wouldn't have been able to imagine, because I'm limited on how I think things can even work.
Yeah.
And so anyway, just something to think about. If you are in that market and you're interested, you can call Bob Eisenhower at 515-979-2883 or John at 515-783-4837. I've had real estate interactions with both fellas. Both been awesome, very accommodating. And I'm kind of – actually, my wife and I are always we're those alpha people, right? Like, we only pipe up when we're looking for some kind of weird deal somewhere. And where you sneak in and you've got to offer less than what they got. And, like,
John, I found this drive-in movie theater.
Yeah.
They're ready to sell. It's like 54 grand.
Yeah.
How much do you think I could get out of my house? Yeah, this, like, is what Ben does.
We're opportunistic movers. Like, we're looking, but we're not itching to leave. But we're like, oh, hey, that might work out. And so, like, poor John drug his behind out there a few times to go look at some kind of ramshackle at the edge of town that we were looking at. I would have loved it, man. It would have been great. And here's what John's supportive. He's like, yep, no, give it a shot. It's going to be awesome.
See, this is why you hire professionals, right? The internet will tell you, no, it's not the right time. What do you know, internet? I'm calling John. He'll take me out.
John's like, you don't win opportunities you don't put money down on. Give it a go. It was great.
I wanted to buy a school once, and my wife, she's like, we can't afford all those shutters.
We tried to buy a school once. You know what killed you?
It's perfect.
It's the insurance. The mortgage insurance on the place is the replacement cost. And, of course, it's like $8 million. And so now your payment is like $75,000 a month. And you're out completely. Even if they're selling it for 20 grand,
I didn't get that part.
No, yeah, we got as far as checking the insurance.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out.
I went through it twice. This could be the shop, be my first bedroom. Here's our Tuesday bedroom. Didn't work.
I bet you see some weird stuff.
There was an article recently in the paper about a lady that bought a jail. I don't know if you guys saw that, but bought like a 100-year-old jail, and she's turning it into a house. So she has like 7 kids, and everybody's got their own cell. You know,
the metaphors play themselves.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy an old church. If you ever see on the market,
Yeah, there we see them all the time.
That's my bucket list.
That's not good. People selling churches all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one in Pleasantville, actually. My dad and I came across, and the buyer for that one's turning it into a residence.
Yeah,
no kidding. I saw that one.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty nice.
I think just the history, everything, it was just kind of a cool thought. I don't know.
Yeah. Although, you remember that time, Dan, where we went through that church that was
on East 29th?
They were auctioning stuff off.
It was, different one. Yeah,
like, we were looking to potentially buy this thing. And, like, people were in there, and they were auctioning off all the stuff off because they were selling the church. I think the Cadillac dealer, maybe Betts or whoever's over there on that side of town, the Lexus, somebody is using it for parked cars and stuff. And now there's another church meeting in it. But, like, we went in there, and I thought, oh, we'll pick up some auction deals. And from this church, and like Dan's right, it was just sad. Yeah. Like a bunch of people kind of picking through church's stuff, auctioning it off, and you're like, oh, well, actually, a deal.
This was Jesus stuff once.
Yeah, this is kind of depressing. Yeah, it was. It was a bummer.
I'd like to see Jesus as the auctioneer. That's pennies on the dollars. No way I'm going to get rid of it at that price.
Some dude's like, I'll use this communion table for my new bar.
It's like, oh, man.
Keep walking.
That's a bummer. All right. Hey, actually, I did have a question for you guys, because I think it's interesting running into people that follow Jesus and then understanding how that interacts in their work. And so, like, most people's work isn't I go talk to people about Jesus, right? So most people have jobs where there's the prime focus is something else. And so maybe my question for you guys is, like, how does your faith interact with what you do? Like, as a realtor, how does your faith influence or interact with the type of work that you do every day?
Yeah, it's not, at the tip of our tongue, every conversation we have with buyers and sellers, but at least we like to think it's evident by the way we do business and the way we treat people, and that we're a good witness. And one easy, I guess, transition is if somebody's looking to buy, especially, if we're always trying to figure out what's important to them. Is it schools? Is it be close to work? And once in a while, church will come up or faith will come up. So, once you kind of scratch the surface a little bit of, oh, they do go to a church, they attend a church, what church do you go to? What are you looking for in a church? Then, from there we've got something to talk about. So, I wouldn't say that, we're talking about it all the time with every client, but hopefully it doesn't take the client too long to realize that, we're believers and we have a good testimony and we can be witnesses for Christ, on a daily basis.
It's kind of funny how that comes up too. Like I've dealt with people during business transactions, and like I don't know, after you talk to him for a little bit, you're like, there's something different about this dude, right? Like everything that everyone tries to tell you about how to be in this world but not of it, right? Like they can tell that you're different, like, and it really does happen that way. Like there's people that I continue to do business with merely because I don't know if they're flagrantly Christian, right? But I can tell by the way that they act that there's something different about them. Mm-hmm. And it does seem to just shine through that way. And like you always get that sinking suspicion, like, I bet that guy's a Jesus man. You can just kind of tell. And I don't know that I've been wrong. Like usually I can tell if someone's a Jesus man just by the way they carry themselves, by the way that they do business, and frankly how honest they are. Usually they're pretty honest and pretty upfront. And I think that shines through just about as much as you would hope, mm-hmm. right? I think it's pretty evident when you deal with people that you can tell if you're another Jesus person, you could tell, right? Like you can kind of tell that. But like even the folks that aren't, they'll think there's just something different about this about these people. It's just really noticeable.
Yeah.
And so I think that's right. You don't have to be banner carrying and like first thing off the bat. Hey, by the way, I'm a Jesus man. Are you? You know, they like. Just the way that you handle yourself.
10% discount if you are.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I think the way that and God's kingdom works that way, right? Like, he set it up to be obviously different. Like, grace is a completely foreign concept to most people because it's so obviously, counteracts what we normally are used to. And so I think the kingdom living in general just shows itself up as a completely different slap to the face than most.
Yep.
No, yeah, and I would agree with that. I think, and that's kind of why I think the question is interesting is seeing how natural some of those things are, right? Like that's how people actually get to know other people and get in a community and get to know Jesus, not because you wore the shirt, not because you hugging Jesus on your business card, right? Like, it's you get to know people, and by getting to know people, you know who they are, and you care about who they are, and as you do that, like, some of those things start to come up in which they're natural ways to have conversations. And I think it's helpful to understand, like, that people who are doing work, like most of the people that are listening to this are doing, like, the burden is on you to love people and have conversations, and those things will naturally coalesce around things that are important to you and things that are important to them, and those will meet.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting even to see, like, the vast amount of people. You guys get to talk to a lot of different people, a lot of different circumstances, a lot of different situations. And even then, like there's easy common ground to just by caring and talking to people, you learn about their family and the things that they value, and you can share those things and have conversations. And frankly, that's where real change happens. It doesn't happen because you bullied somebody. It doesn't happen because you had a sweet sign and a sweet pamphlet. Like, it happened because you met people as people, and you're people that, like, as a guy that knows and loves Jesus, I know how to communicate that to another guy who needs to know and love Jesus. And those conversations seem to come up a lot more naturally than I think sometimes we think.
Well, to be honest with you, like, they're a perfect example, right? Like, I didn't know that about you guys when I met you, and I took a stab at it. Like, I guessed, because I kind of always had a sinking suspicion that might be the deal, but I didn't know, and right? And so when the radio show came up, and I needed to call somebody and talk to them about being on the show, like, that's why I threw it out to you. I didn't know that about you, but I just kind of took a guess. And so, like, if that's any testimony to just living a life that produces, even a suspicion that you might – that's what you want. You want to be a suspected Jesus man. maybe they're not 100% sure. It's like you can either be the suspected creepy guy next door, or you can be a suspected Jesus man. They're both the same, right? Judging by the way you're living your life, I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that guy's probably a Jesus man. Yeah. And so, like, I can attest to the fact that it works that way.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's take a look at this these two girls. So two girls.
Did you skip the 10 toxic guys?
Oh, shoot. Sorry. No, all right, we'll start with that.
You better do it, man.
Sorry, I'm going to miss it again. 10 toxic Christians in the church today. Let's start by saying we are all guilty of being at least one of these people sometimes.
Crap.
This post is a great opportunity for us to pray for God to show the area of our lives that don't parallel the gospel and how we can pray to be a church that glorifies Christ! ! Boy, there's a long introduction. Several years ago, I had some friends over for dinner. Things were going well until everyone took their first bite of food. You see, I decided to fire up the grill and cook some burgers. I went through the usual grilling routine. I grilled dozens of times before, slap on the meat, flip a few times, voila. But not really. Everyone sunk their teeth into the burgers. Blood flowed worse than the time I nearly sliced off my finger. Ooh. After a few awkward stares, I realized what happened. In a moment of sheer embarrassment, I got up from my chair and grabbed some deli turkey from the fridge.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's a rough time. Random question. Why is this person who makes the mistake always the last one to realize it? Anyway, no one at the table even considered trying my straight-from-the-meat section burgers. Why? Just one bite of uncooked meat is toxic to the body and could result in an appointment with Mr. John.
Oh.
Boy, that's
what the heck?
What is true of meat is also toxic. True of the church. A few toxic Christians can impact an entire church. So I want to highlight some toxic Christians in the church today. The following Christians describe me at various points in my Christian journey. Understand something. This post is really about self-reflection. My prayer is that you will identify some of these toxic behaviors in your life and, like myself, make some changes. Here we go. Here they are. Number one, the always cynical Christian. Cynicism is toxic. From a general lack of trust towards people to the inability to see good in anything, cynicism has the power to infect every arena of your life. Many Christians, starting with me, mastered the art of pointing out the bad from a young age. For much of my Christian journey, I thought it was my job to find the errors in everything from sermons to the lives of those around me. I was like a stealth ninja. My only job, wouldn't the opposite be a bad ninja? Anyway, my only job was to make sure every mistake was pointed out. And after finding the errors, my friends and I would gather for a time of reflection. It was really an exercise of self-glorification. I don't know. Agreed? You see that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's often promoted. If you can point out the flaws in something, then yeah.
I currently do this.
You're the cynicism guy?
Yeah, and here's the reason I realize this, because every time someone tells me a story about the church they go to, I think, no, man, that place sounds like a dump.
That's terrible.
Here's the deal. You shouldn't be laughing. Like, that's maybe not what I say, but it's what I think, right? They're like, yeah. We're doing this, or we tried to start a small group, and our church didn't want us to do it. They wanted us to join a men's group, and I'm like, man, why would they do that? That place is junk, you know. And I don't know why they do it. Like, I didn't even care to ask. I always just I don't innately trust folks, other folks, right? And right. so, like, yeah, this resonates with me. And I didn't notice it was a problem until I was talking to a guy last week about it. He was telling me about his church and his small group and the way his church operated. And I thought, man, I hate everything about what you're saying. And, like, it's not a right response, right? Like, everything that you're saying, I'm like, I don't hear Jesus in any of these things. Like, I'm angry. I think you should leave. Or you should stay because they don't know Jesus, and you do. So maybe you should stay and talk to them about Jesus, you know? And I thought, this is not helpful to anybody. I'm double-minded. And so, yeah, this totally happens, and I'm a perpetrator.
So he says, I understand what you might be thinking. There's a difference between cynicism and critical thinking.
That's what I say. That's what cynical people say.
Here it is. Cynics look at the worst in every situation, never desiring to make things better. Critical thinkers recognize the evil and ugly, but always choose to focus on something redeeming. They always operate out of hope, and they are always in the trenches trying to make things better. To put it another way, cynics focus on what something is. Critical thinkers focus on what something could be.
Yeah, cynics are looking for a reason to reject.
Yeah. You nailed it. That's me.
Yeah. Mike, you got to repent and change your ways. You're a toxic man.
Are you kicking me out of the church?
No.
I'd like to come back for rehabilitation.
okay.
I tend to do that, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's me and Dan.
Oh.
Shoot, man.
So, I mean, some great thing can be going on, and all I can think about is dude, you dropped a pickle on the floor.
Yeah, why didn't you like, put the chairs away?
I don't care that you fed 1,000 people. Do you see that pickle? That's a stain.
That's a stain.
Who's going to clean that up? I am.
This place used to be worth $500,000.
Baptisms happen in moments. Pickle stains are forever.
That's right.
Pull it together.
Oh.
All right, Dan's guilty. Here we go. number two, the back row Christian. In college, I sat in the back row of every class. I didn't want the teacher to call on me. I wanted to spend my time browsing the internet or adjusting my fantasy football roster. I wasn't interested in the material. To be honest, I only showed it for class because I thought it would help me at the end of the semester. Well, yeah.
That's why everybody goes to class. That's not a big revelation.
This will help.
I only dated a woman because I thought it would be difficult to ask her for a hand in marriage if I never show up to a date.
I better know her name.
Such is the case with back row Christians. They are mildly interested in God, at best. Being a back row Christian isn't about where you sit in a pew or chair during worship. Some back row Christians are front row worshipers. There's too many quotes in this article.
Yeah.
This is about where God sits in proximity to your life.
That's are you being deep. Cynical?
That's heavy. No, I'm not number one. Most back row Christians keep God at arm's length. They are driven by money, titles, and achievements. They don't want God interfering with their pursuits, unless, of course, God wants to help them reach their goals. Yeah? No?
I got lost in his explanation.
Yeah, so
they're looking for minimums.
Yeah, it's I don't like, get them.
Jesus, what's the bare minimum I need in order to be a follower of you? And they're not looking at what's the abundant life that you have to offer. They're just looking to slide by, you know.
Yeah, what can I get of what you promise without giving up what I want?
Hey, man, we talked about these kind of guys, though, right? And that's everybody to a certain extent. But, like, we talked about these guys. It's like it has to be – it's an exhausting lifestyle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right? To say, look, I understand that I acknowledge that you're the almighty king and that you run a kingdom and you promise joy if I can be part of that kingdom. But I just kind of like to act like I'm part of it and not really accept any of the joy or do any of the work. But like, it just has to be so exhausting to act that way.
Yeah.
And I'm not to say that I haven't done that, too. Like, it is exhausting. You know what I'm saying? You act like you believe this thing, and you do everything else that has nothing to do with that thing, and you think, why do I feel so distant from the Lord? Why do I feel like we're not connecting? I don't feel like I'm really involved in the church, and God's not listening to me in my prayers. These are all things that where you've gone, I see the joy you're offering, and I see that you told me how to be part of your kingdom, and I'm not doing any of those things. Why are you so far away from me? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what ends up happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always thought, what a waste of time. You know, if I'm going to be a back row dude, it's like, there's other things I could be doing. You know, why bother? Why I could be fishing Sunday morning, or I could be doing something
you could be
else.
A front row something else, right?
Exactly. So I've just never fully understood.
Yeah.
But I know they're out there. There's lots of them out there. And it's just, I just can't. That's one of them. Of the 10, I'll probably be able to go, yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I mean, there's a difference between Jesus saying, come and see, and people come and see, and they don't know what they're going to be looking at, and so, you know, they're dipping in. I get that.
Yeah.
What I don't get is the guy that is kind of knows what Jesus is asking and says, no, I don't really want to give all that stuff up, but they're still here.
Mm-hmm. It's like the lukewarm.
You're right.
Of Revelation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the lukewarm. And, like, and I think
a
lot of people are in that boat because what Jesus is asking for is a lot. Like, that's the truth. We need to be honest about that. It's like, it's from a human perspective, the reason we sit here is because Jesus asked for a whole heck of a lot on basically nothing but his trust and word and who I am. Now, I think that's enough because he's demonstrated that. Like, he's taken steps to say, I know that you're going to be thinking that. Here's I'm showing myself to you through my word and through my actions, through your community and things like that. But, like, I mean, to be honest, it's a completely reasonable place to be, which is I'm interested in what Jesus is offering, but he's asking a whole awful lot, so I'm just kind of hanging back. It's a reasonable thing. It's just not a faithful thing.
Right.
Because that isn't what Jesus is asking. And he's asking, he's offering you everything in exchange for everything. It's a pretty even trade.
It is. But, and the people that have nailed this that I know, like, they're the freest people I know. Like they're a cartoon version of themselves, you know? Like, I look at them and I'm like, I have no idea how you live life this way. But they live it almost completely free because they've given up everything, right? Like, it is. It's a 50-50 trade. It's even. Like, he says, give these things up. Don't do these things. Get involved with these things. And you think, how will this ever logically work? And you just end up being free. And, like, those people just end up living an amazing life that lets me sit back in the back row and go, that's what I want. I just don't want to give up my stuff.
Yeah, and I was talking about this over with the kids. We were reading through in Luke when they're talking about, you know, can I go wait till my father dies and bury him and that kind of thing. And I said, I was trying to talk to my kids about it. And I said, one of the things I think we really need to realize is that as much as I want to say I will do whatever God asks me to, just recognize that like I probably haven't been pushed the point to answer that question honestly. Mm-hmm. Like I am at the point where I can answer it honest in my own circumstance, but like. My youngest daughter goes, but we were talking about, you know, God may, he may send you somewhere. He may, ask you to do things that aren't comfortable or don't have the things that you want or enjoy about it. But we have to trust that, like, if God is behind it, it can't be wrong. Right. And if God is behind it, it must contain everything that he promises. It has to be, if it's his burden, it has to be light. I'm going to find peace regardless of what my human situation looks like. And so if all those things are true, it's trusting that the situation is agnostic. It's God that is invested in it. And so if I can look at it that way, then even if he says, you guys are moving, or you're going to stop doing what you're doing, or you're going to go to a different church, or you're not going to be in this part of the country anymore, or I'm going to have you do these things differently, like all those things are irrelevant what the predicate of the sentence is. It is, God is behind it. Okay, what? And like getting there is difficult, and the truth is that like I think there's a lot of things I wouldn't flinch at, but I'm certain there's a lot of things I would. Yeah. There's a lot of things I would flinch at, and where like my kingdom building doesn't look like the goofy caricature of a guy that's building his own kingdom, but like I'm still building my kingdom. It's just I'm acting like it's smaller and probably further down the road, and so I just have to be aware of that. But like that was the conversation. My youngest daughter was like tearing up a little bit. She's like, well, I don't want you guys to move. And I said, I said, in honesty, babe, like part of what God calls me to is to be your dad. And so like, it's possible, but it doesn't seem all that likely that wherever we're going, you're not going.
Right.
But the truth is like, let's say that were even the case. I'm willing to put anything on the table and say, what if God was behind it, it still has to be the right thing. And so we need to look at those and trust that God has it under control. Hasn't he always shown himself faithful to us? And the answer was yes. And I'm like, okay. It's hard to grasp because we want to fight for a human thing. And, like, very few of us have been pushed to the point where we'd have to answer that question, which I think is the most, honestly. But, like, that is what I'm fighting for is the right perspective. And it's difficult. It's difficult, especially your kids looking at you, and they're like, well, how, why would God do that? And I said, it's irrelevant. Like, the question is God doing it? And if we can answer yes to that, then we hug it and we say we're in.
Yeah.
And that's God. And that's it's a him. It's not a why. It's not a where. It's not a how. It's a who. Is God in it? Then yes, we're in. Awesome. And if we can live like that, then we will live free, regardless of our circumstances. And like that's what Jesus is asking for. And that's tough. It's a tough thing. And we have to be honest. Even when we're talking, I want to be like, how can you sit in the back row and act like that? But like, if I'm being honest, hey man, I know what Jesus is asking, but it's still worth it. You know what I'm saying? And like all these things that you think come with living this life that is this kind of in between, it's not worth it. And so let's talk about what Jesus is asking, what he's offering. And so, like, that's at least an honest conversation. All right, that was, what was that, number two? Holy cats.
You better speed this thing up, Ben.
Three, the world is caving in, Christian. It's not ironic that most of these Christians, I feel like we're talking about the different names of the My Little Ponies. Sorry, that's what
gave Have you
what,
seen what? My Little Pony?
No.
Well, then, you continue on.
All right. Is this the fear and the world's falling apart?
Yeah, you got to truncate this dude's explanation. He's Boova style bloviated.
Sorry. A zombie apocalypse is imminent. Every major story, especially the tragic ones, are conspiracy theories.
This is the half the people
they
I
allow
know.
Fear to dominate their life.
These are the folks who are going around saying, hey, we're living in the end times and whatever.
Yeah.
Evil's on the rise.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Evil's on the rise.
You know what? I wonder. I think the same reaction to them is the same reaction to the last folks. It's a who? Maybe evil is on the rise.
Yeah.
Maybe it is the end of the world. Who? Who are you following?
Well,
and we're fine.
Some of this goes back to like some of that conversations we had about some of the political stuff. You know, running through town. It is a bellwether for where you're getting your instruction from, right? Like, maybe evil is on the rise. Maybe you're right about
that.
Maybe
it is. Who knows?
Okay. Is Jesus still king? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then evil's on the rise, right? Uh-huh. Did they elect a Democrat? Is Jesus still king? Yeah. Well, okay. Did they elect? I don't care. Republican? I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Like, I care. I'm not saying, you know, exercise yourself out of the political process. But, like, on the whole, we give a lot more weight to the effects of Christ than we do Christ. You know what I'm saying? We like to take all the things that look like Jesus or that promote some of the same principles as Jesus, and you put all your weight and force in those things, and then when Jesus comes along, you're like, I'm busy doing your work. I don't have time for this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like, and that's the doomsday stuff. Like, let's say the end of the world is tomorrow. Okay. God, he called it. He called it what it was, right? So, it's a small deal.
Yeah. I don't know. John Eisenhower, you run into guys like that? You know fellas say the world's caving in, end of the world's on the way?
Yeah. Not too much with work, but...
Well, that'd be awkward. I'm looking at a four-bedroom, although the world's ending tomorrow. Seems like a foolish purchase.
Is there room for a bomb shelter?
We have sold a few houses with bomb shelters. Nice. People are waiting for the end of the world.
I mean, what is it, a sweet added bonus for them, or are they like, no, seriously, it's got to already have it?
No, we've had them both occasions where they have to have it because they think it's coming, and then... Other times they just happen to buy a house where somebody else believed that and it was already there.
I feel like if a bomb shelter was important to me, I would design it myself.
I wouldn't trust some other dude to
do it. No. I don't know what he did or who he hired to do it, because then the guy he hired to do it knows all about it. So you got to do the work yourself and do it on the sly.
Yeah.
That's amazing how just consuming that can be, though, isn't it? If you have friends or family or you listen to radio or TV and... You just get sucked into, you know, some of that programming. And
Like
you said, you know, is Jesus still king? Is God still ruling the earth? Yeah, he is.
Well, then we're good for today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we're solid.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you should be consumed with.
I asked to borrow a guy's computer at work, and he opened it up to let me use it, and he had tape over his webcam. And I said, why do you have tape over your webcam?
They're watching.
Sometimes they turn it on and can look at me, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
I said, I think there's medication for stuff like what you got.
Actually, a lot of people at work do that same thing. Now, I think corporate IT, actually, you might have a reason to think that. But, like, I open it up. Every time I open my work laptop, I don't tape it. And I look at it, I'm like, you're welcome. Because I feel like they get a sweet.
Welcome to the show.
They get a fresh view all day. And I feel like, you know.
Well, here's the thing, though, is, like, unless I take my computer into the John with me, I don't care what you see that I do. I'm just out doing my job, you know. Like, I wish people were that excited to see me turning a wrench on something. You know, I mean, I don't see the problem. People are like, they might spy on me at work. Well, if you're doing work, what do you care? You know what I'm saying? Unless you're selling weed out the back of your Volvo, then I don't think it's that big of a deal.
No, that's true. That's true. Anyway, I see a lot of that. A lot of that in the corporate environment. They're worried that there's the same guy that sets the internet filter is taking a peep on you. And I'm like, I thought of some reasons because I thought maybe I should get some tape and tape that up. And I could not conceivably think of something that I really care that they're looking at me. What, are they going to catch me picking my nose? I mean, like, normal conversation, you might catch it.
Look,
so,
that guy's doing what he's supposed to be doing for his hourly wage. Tell everybody.
Get Chuck. Everyone can watch. Like, all right. Chuck needs a life. All right. World is caving in. Hey, Bob, you should send all those guys to John, though. That would be funny. Because every time they call and they say, we need a bomb shelter, we have a guy for that.
Yeah.
Let me get you to John.
Then John goes, man, we're getting all these bomb shelter calls. I understand what's going on. People are really freaking out.
Some guy's got some kind of Satan goat statue. He needs to fit in a root cellar. And like, I don't even have a root cellar that tall. All right. The follow the rules Christian. Oh, boy. Follow the rules Christians believe their actions make them cool with God. They condemn other Christians for their lack of morality. and secretly they are okay with Christians falling on their face because it makes follow the rules Christians feel better about themselves. Okay, so here's the deal. I'm gonna tell me if I'm thinking about this wrong, though. There's a guy telling me a story about a Muslim friend of his, and they were talking about reacting to, there was adultery or whatever. And, like, they went and talked to this guy and said, you need to stop cheating on your wife. And apparently he ignored it. So they got him, they got more guys from the group of guys, and they went and talked to him. And then he refused to stop cheating on his wife. And then the same group of guys went the third time, and they beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
And then the next day, they brought him some soup and stuff and some bread.
Sure.
And here's – I was thinking about that story. I thought, well, so the church discipline thing doesn't really talk about beating the crap out of a guy. But, well, like – but here's what I thought of, though. I thought, I like it that they see sin rightly. you know what I'm saying? Like, don't hear me as endorsing the reaction. But, right – but, like, there is a difference between saying – when Jesus has died for our sins and making light of sin. And I thought, I don't like their tactics, but I feel like they're at least holding it in the right understanding that you've done something wrong and offensive and it needs to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there was a couple more things that he talked about from some reactions to Muslims. And I thought, you know, I like some of the things they're talking about, of some of the things that they still adhere to. And I'm like, boy, if the Christians would really just respect God's word in that way, even if I don't agree with their respecting, I thought, yeah, just like the Mormons going door to door. I'm like, yeah, I mean, those guys are after it. They're mm-hmm. putting some work in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Christians got to get off our duff, right? Like, we take things too lightly. Like, because of grace and because of what Christ has done, like, we put kind of a chill on most of the stuff. And I think it doesn't mean that it's still not covered, right? It doesn't mean that he still didn't die for it. But, like, there was just something about understanding rightly what sin is that I thought, I wish I had a little bit of that without having the wrong reaction to it. Does that make sense? Am I thinking of that right,
yeah.
fellas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think about it like when your parents or like your cheap grandpa gave you like a brand new Wii for Christmas. You know, you're like, hey man, this is awesome. He's like, yeah, I got it off a buddy of mine for like $10. You're like, well, that really kind of cheapened it. You know, like I was blown away with the gift on its own.
Yeah,
and then you lessened it. You know, and made it not such a big deal. And when we look at sin that way, we say, you know, I was under the death penalty, right? Like I was going to be separated from God because of this, and Jesus did this, and then we say, you know, it really wasn't that big deal to begin with, so it's not a thing, you know. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And like some of that's when you're introducing someone to know Jesus, it's the same thing. What were you talking about? When people take offense, right? When people say when they've hurt you in some way, and then you say I forgive you. Right, and we basically act like the thing that they did wasn't really that offensive, and the truth of the matter was it was offensive, right? But I'm forgiving you the entire offense. I'm not going to lessen what you did and act like it wasn't offensive or that it didn't hurt, because it did. But I'm going to forgive you all the more. And the same thing is true in this aspect, right? Like when you cheapen something, you're basically telling a lie. And I don't know. I think the same thing applies.
Yeah. So and I, the only reason I brought that up is because like. I don't want to misunderstand some of the follow the rules Christian that they're talking about. Like, I mean, it sounds like the energy behind this or the motivation behind some of this is inappropriate. But like, I don't want to lessen, I guess, because this guy's a jerk. I don't think that lessens the thought that maybe we could do more to understand sin rightly, while also which gives us a fuller understanding of what Christ has actually done.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, and so I don't want to ignore that perspective. Simply because we have grace, I understand grace all the more because I understand sin correctly.
Yeah.
And so the fall. I get that this guy's the guy that condemns other Christians for their lack of morality. He's putting himself on a pedestal. That's wrong. If they're okay with other people falling on their face because it makes them feel better, that's obviously like the motivation is wrong. But like, I'd be careful about saying, hey, that guy thinks highly about following what God has said, and he seems to be pretty concerned about it. I feel like, yeah, okay. Yes.
Well, I mean, and that's what takes some of the indignation that most people have towards the Pharisees in the New Testament. It kind of deflates that balloon a little bit, right? Like, those guys took God's law very seriously. Mm-hmm. They added some stuff, yeah. Did they overstep their bounds a little bit? Yeah. Did they make judgment calls that weren't theirs to make? Yeah. But, like, they have way more respect for God's commands than I do. You know, I mean, they set up three rules back to make sure you didn't get even close to what God had said, right? There has to be some type of reverence there that says you respect God's authority to this degree that you would make three rules to keep you away. And we do the same thing with, like, when we consider having relationships with, you know, to protect your marriage, you know? Yeah. Like you try not to be in the same room with when it's just you and a gal, it's going to be a long time, and no one's around, and is that a sin? No, right? But do we look at it and go, I got to figure out some way to make this safer for everybody. I don't even want this to be a question at all, ever. You know, and so, like, do we do kind of the same thing? I try to set up a couple hundred feet back and go, this is obviously not a problem, but I don't want it to be a problem either. You know, and so I'll set up some boundaries and make sure that we're cool. I'll take a guy with me or something, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, the following the rules thing, is as much as we like to beat on those guys, like, you know, they do have a high respect for God's word, which is, you know, I mean, something that's beneficial to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. He says the message of the cross is you can't earn it. And I agree with that. I just think we got to be careful at labeling a guy who actually is, you know, passionately trying to follow God's word here. And that doesn't make him a jerk. Unless he's actually a jerk about it, then you just call that what it is.
Yeah, if he's like,
some righteous guy.
Yeah, you suck, I'm great, I follow rules. That guy does suck. No one likes to be around that dude.
Let me remind you of this verse.
And like all the guys that I know that toe a pretty tight line, like they're not like that, right? They'll say, without God's grace, I wouldn't be who I am. And I'm just telling you, this is where I use this phrase all the time. I say that this is where the joy's at. This is where God says the joy is. This is where Christ says the joy is. And like if that's all I can promise you, that's what I can offer, right? If I know God, and from what I know about him, he says that the thing that you're doing won't produce joy, or the thing that you should be doing will produce joy. That's what I can say.
All right. Ooh, here we go. The political Christian. Every church has a few of these. That's an undercount. They equate the decisions of our government with the direction of the church. They believe how you vote determines whether you love God, and their conversations usually include a rant about the president of the most recent government decision. It's really quite fascinating how these Christians work politics in every conversation. Just think if political Christians channel their creative energy and passion about politics towards Jesus, can you say revival? Yeah, I guess, and we've talked about this quite a bit over the last, I don't know, few months, really, about just understanding what things are a step away from moving the needle and what things actually move the needle. And so, you know, if we live in God's kingdom, we are servants of the Almighty King, you can't put your all the eggs in a different kingdom's basket and then be surprised of which it doesn't act like God's kingdom. It doesn't mean we don't interact with it. It doesn't mean we don't use whatever influence is available to it to try to further God's kingdom stuff. It just means that if we are that invested in it, that means like we are having to take that time away from otherwise doing what might be God's work and using a false barometer and saying God's kingdom is not going well because our country is not going well. Well, you might have overinvested on what your country is actually capable of being the barometer for, and you seem to be surprised at some things that the Bible makes it sound like we shouldn't be all that surprised about.
Yeah.
So, we've talked about that quite a bit.
I used to be that guy.
Dan used to be that guy.
Yeah.
Dan's double hit on the list.
Dan's reformed. Reformed Dan.
I'm reformed. Yeah.
Don't overpromise. Pete's going to come visit your place if you're a reformer. All right. Pete, I'll tell you where Dan lives.
Hey, he's going to move.
No, that's true. Dan, are you in the market to move?
No.
No, Dan's not moving.
Oh, crap.
All right, hey, here's the deal. You're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Big thanks, as always, to the Eisenhower team. Bob and John coming, hanging out with us. We still got some more show to go. So if you listen to the podcast, we got extra show coming to you. But go visit EisenhowerTeam.com for all your home buying and selling needs. If you're in the market, or if you think you might want to be in the market, or you just want to know what your house is worth, and then that will determine whether you're in the market. Or maybe you saw a house down the road and you thought, hey, man, maybe I want in on that. All these things are possibilities. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. You can look at listings out there, or you can give Bob or John a call. Those phone numbers are sitting out on the website. I will, just as like we said earlier in the show, like we've done work with these guys. It's always an awesome experience. And so I would highly encourage you to check that out. And since he's in the room, I suppose I won't go too far on this, but like, even if you're not in the market to buy or sell a house, you know, I don't know, shoot him an email, give him a call and say, hey, thanks for sponsoring Live from the Path. Those guys are the reason that we get to stay on the air. So big thanks for that.
They really specialize in bomb shelters too. So
yeah. Apparently John knows everything there is to know about bomb shelters.
That's right.
Sometimes they call him John Bomb.
John Bombs.
If you're a doomsday prepper,
John Eisenhower's your man.
I'd like to talk to John Bon Jovi. That's hard to say.
You're going to thank me for this, John. You're going to be 2 years in. You're like, this is my life, and yeah. I love it.
I got a cake already made. Move it along.
All right. If you're on the Truth Network 99.3, we've got to let you go. So hang on for the podcast. Guys, be faithful in the means, and God will handle the ends. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. You guys can't hear it, but I'm rocking some sort of techno beats.
Dang it.
Because I feel like it's harder for the YouTube to catch me using music. No. I got to make my word right.
All right.
No, you're never going
to
make
it. This is the restitution. Things are right. Okay. I'm putting things to rights.
Why don't you have this one?
Yeah, let's stop there. We'll hit the other 5-10 toxic Christians in the church today next week.
Okay.
Heads up on the culture is evil and scary Christian, the I love Jesus but not the church Christian, the God doesn't work that way Christian, the loves to pick a fight Christian, and the you can't talk about that in church Christian.
Oh, man.
Those are next week. So we'll hit those next week.
Okay, excellent.
All right, so check this out. So here's a group to unveil Satan statue in Detroit. A group is planning to unveil, so this already happened, we're behind the times on here, but a group is planning to unveil an 8-foot-tall bronze statue featuring a goat-headed Satan in Detroit. It seems funny even saying that, isn't it? It seems funny even to say that. A goat-headed Satan in Detroit during a gathering that's been billed as the largest public satanic ceremony in history. The Satanic Temple has said Saturday's private event will be open only to people with tickets, $25 each. Invitations to the unveiling summon guests to prepare for a night of chaos, noise, and debauchery. Come dance with the devil and experience history in the making. The event location is not being announced publicly and is known only to those with tickets. The group said the bronze Baphomet monument, which weighs in about 1 ton, has never been seen before in public, is not only an unparalleled artistic triumph, but stands as a testament to plurality and the power of collective action. I can think of a lot of other things that are a testament to plurality and collective action.
Yeah, I mean, there were some dudes Congress. cleaning the garbage out from the park that did a pretty nice job collectively.
The statue, which backed by an inverted pentagram and flanked by statues of two young children gazing up at the creature, shows Satan with horns, hooves, wings, and a beard. The group went to say the unveiling event will serve as a call to arms for which we'll kick off our largest fight to date in the name of individual rights to free exercise against self-serving theocrats. You know what's interesting? Is that, like, it's weird that the Satan statue is even involved, right? Like, I know agnostic free thinkers who are pushing for individual rights that don't worship a statue.
Right.
And don't build statues with other things in it and don't invite you to things with debauchery. And so maybe that's one of the things I was wondering as I was reading this is, like, I know why I need God. I don't know why they need Satan. What am I missing?
It's just kind of a rallying cry, like, hey, here's this ideal that we can kind of follow.
Yeah.
It's an ideal to the self, essentially.
But there's what does Satan supposed to offer, right? Like, I've never seen any depiction of Satan that is beneficial for anyone to know.
Well, he'll lie and tell you that, whatever you're dreaming, he can make it happen,
Or that it should happen, I guess.
Yeah.
So really, his only claim to fame is not God. Right? He's the not God.
Right, yeah. He basically goes around saying God's a liar and, all this church nonsense is just bunk. So
it really makes these people feel that much more comfortable in whatever sin or debauchery they're doing. So, something like this.
Like, provides a validation, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just really, really validates, that there is no right or wrong and that there is no moral compass, other than what you feel like doing at that particular time. And so I think, that's, I guess, a symbol that Satan or that statue seems like, and this celebration is just kind of encapsulizing that whole feeling or that movement of, it's not that they're necessarily, I don't think, worshiping the Satan or worshiping that statue, but it's just, this gives us, a reason to do whatever we want and throw, right or wrong out the window.
I think you nailed it. I think you're right. I think they need, it's a justification. It allows you, without taking full responsibility for saying I can do whatever I want, because that could be your personal whim and be wrong, if you can dump it on something else and say this is why I'm able to do whatever I want, and other people agree to that thing, it's all you need is an excuse to do those types of things, and this gives you a pretty good one. It's under the guise of a community. It's under the guise of a specific belief system, which frankly, works on our end, right? Like, Christians do kind of weird stuff that the world would say.
I use the exact same thing to defend some Jesus type behavior.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, you got rid of all your stuff. Yeah, it's because of Jesus. It wasn't my idea.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
said that more than once.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I mean, that makes more sense as opposed to like they're just looking for an excuse to justify that type of behavior, and basically you can offload the responsibility. It doesn't. It's not me anymore. It's just the nature of the belief system. So it also said, let's see, the event originally, photography is strictly prohibited at the 18 and older event, unless, of course, you're a $75 VIP ticket holder. These partygoers will have an exclusive opportunity to be photographed seated on the Baphomet Monument. You can sit on his lap like a Santa.
What are you saying, Baphomet?
Baphomet.
Baphomet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I don't,
I'm not familiar with that one.
No.
Dave Herrick seems to know what it is. Go ahead,
yeah,
Dave.
It's a symbol of a goat-headed figure that was used in pagan worship. So,
Baphomet.
Yeah, usually has a inverted five-pointed star kind of behind him.
Yeah, you know what else I don't understand? There were pictures of this event. And, like, they don't seem to be able to come up with their own symbols. They just find symbols that the church has and turn them upside down or backwards or something.
The marketing department's terrible.
Yeah, put some effort into it, you know?
Hey, what if we called it the Toli Sibyl? They'd never know. It's just like the Holy Bible.
I didn't follow that example.
I had a better idea when I started talking, and then I was already in the pool, and I thought, I'm sunk.
The event was supposed to take place at a Detroit restaurant. That's interesting. But the venue's owner, and he canceled it after learning of the statue's unveiling and the Satanic Temple's involvement. You don't say. We'd like to book your Olive Garden. Oh, it's just a small event. The group said they were very transparent, though.
Who are you with, then? The goat Satanists?
Actually,
oh, well, that's a problem.
So it's funny, though. It says the group said they were very transparent, though, signing the contract as the Satanic Temple. I mean, keep an eye on your contracts, boys.
That's not legally binding.
Just doing some debauchery. No big deal.
Many wonder how Christians will respond to the ceremony. Minister Todd Sanders of Strictly Biblical Teaching Ministries in Detroit says this is a great opportunity for the church. The church can benefit from this because we can view this as an opportunity to get at the truth in terms of what the Satanic Temple believes. I don't think it's anything we should be afraid of at all. We don't need to cower in fear. We have the truth of our side as Christians. Yeah?
Yeah.
Sanders said that this Satanic unveiling is indicative of the end times spoken of in the Bible. There he went. There he went.
We almost had it.
You're on the list, Sanders.
End times guy.
I mean, here's what's interesting, though, right? Is like, take the example, to even say Baphomet, right, implies that it's something that has happened before. And that wasn't the end of times. People, you got to let that stuff go. And like, you just got to let that stuff go. When God says, just be ready, let's walk, what were we talking about last week? You walk miles. That's being ready. Be ready walking miles on a day-to-day basis. And then, just let God kind of handle that. And I think things are going to be fine. We really don't need to be calling stuff out. All right. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. Like, although, here's also what it brings to mind, though, is people that don't believe what you believe, what I believe as a Christian, can look at some of the stuff that we do with that same eye. Right? I can be like, you got a guy with a goat face, and he's pointing to things, and there's two kids looking at him, and you got an upside-down cross, and then what? What am I supposed to do?
Yeah,
like say hi to this thing, say particular things, sing songs or whatever. Like coming out of a completely agnostic perspective, Christianity has some of these types of things. I would just otherwise say that they're right, and other people might look and say that they're goofy. And so, I don't know. I don't know what I think the right reaction to that is. Except be sensitive to the fact that like when people are outside of your culture, looking in can be a foreign experience.
Hey man, sometimes it's foreign to me. You know what I'm saying? Like when stuff goes down and I think I'm going to pray and I think, do I really expect this to do something? Like when people say, hey, this is going on in my life and my response is, my instant response is, hey, man, can I pray with you about it? And I think, boy, that must have sounded funny on their end. You know what I'm saying? Like that was my initial response is, hey, we should talk to a God that you don't know. And then hopefully he will do his magic on whatever it is that is going on in your life, right? That's what it sounds like to them. I had that happen to a guy last week. And his kid was going in for surgery, and I said, hey, man, I'll be praying for that. I had no idea, but I'll be praying, you know. And he's like, okay. And then just kind of started looking the other way. And I thought, man, it didn't occur to me that probably sounds really funky and weird that I just offered to do that, you know. But I mean, it's true. When I look at the Satan statue or whatever, and I think, it's the stupidest freaking thing I've ever heard of, right? and then I'll go into the building this Sunday, and we'll throw a guy underwater for 1 second and claim life has changed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, looks just as weird.
Right, right. So, I don't know, just something to consider, I guess. All right. Question of etiquette, and then we'll, Mike, this will lead right in probably into the Dear Life from the Past.
Got it.
Two girls. Oh shoot! What happened? Technical. I got technical problems. So two girls are basically outed for outed a woman that was sending. Now sexting. That doesn't mean necessarily nudity, right? She just could be like talking to another man.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that she's, you know.
I'm unfamiliar with these terms.
No, that's understandable. Oh shoot! There was. Oh. Sorry, just as the article reloaded, I'd already hit stop like I was going to reload the thing. Mike, do you have one? Do you have one at the ready?
Yeah, I got one.
Why don't you fire one up, and then I'll get to this after.
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path. I'm 56, and I still don't know what I want to do with my life.
Whoa.
I have no... Woo.
56? Sorry. Please feel free to write us any of your problems.
We are not...
Without judgment.
We don't jump to snap judgments at all.
We love you.
Hey, old man. I have no
real, life.
He says, I have no real talents or passions. I have 1,000 interests and hobbies, none of which would ever develop into a career. I have worked whatever job I could to get to pay the bills, more or less, but they have all been near minimum wage, so 10 years from retirement, I have no savings. I got to the point I was so miserable at my last job that I quit without having another one waiting for me. So I'll probably end up taking whatever dead-end job I can get just to get a paycheck. How can I convince potential employers I could do something different when I don't believe it myself?
Because you won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've just described your history, but you've also described your future. Sorry, yeah. Bud.
Yeah, you can't even convince us.
Yeah. Just accept it. Make peace with yourself.
Yeah, the question is basically, how can I convince my employers that I'm not exactly who I am? Here's the deal. I can't be trusted to work anywhere for any amount of time. I have no ambitions or hobbies. And frankly, I quit jobs all the time. Why won't you hire me for a money-making career?
But I could be doing brain surgery if I wanted to.
Yeah, at 56, it's over, dude. You're gonna work. It's just, I'm sorry, you've set yourself up poorly.
So legitimately, I would say, is like, you've already kind of done this. Just embrace it on purpose and say, I live a life with varied experiences. And just get used to job hopping for low dollars.
This is what I would do. This is my honest if I was in the same situation. He has no family. I'm assuming that's with him. I'm reading that into it. One way ticket, Honolulu. Live on the beach.
So just
there was ours. Yeah.
We went there. There are a lot of homeless people hanging out, and it's a great place to live.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is hang out.
Take yourself out of the productive part of society completely.
I think he did about 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I'm sorry. So the agreement is quit entirely. Live off people.
You can try to get jobs there
in Honolulu.
I'm just saying, you have no retirement. Enjoy
Dad
what you've got.
You can be just as unsuccessful.
Live in paradise.
Anywhere else.
Live in paradise, my friend.
Yeah. I did not expect you to be on board with this, Eric. I'm not sure why.
Well, what else is he going to do? Just go around being in miserable jobs for low money? Or he can be in a miserable job for low money, working maybe 15 hours a week on a beach.
Yeah.
Might as well enjoy it.
Yeah, but why don't we all do this then, if this is okay?
I've thought about it.
Because we want different things out of life.
I still have family.
Oh, man. It's exactly what that song, the Homeless in Hawaii song from To Be a Man is. Remember that when they were in here?
Yeah.
That's exactly. Dude goes living on the beach in Hawaii, and Hawaii keeps chucking people out.
Where are you at on this, Eisenhower's? Anything?
I like the idea. I mean, if you're going to, you know, not have goals or ambitions, why not just do it in a place
style.
Like Hawaii and instead of, you know, living in misery and frustration. And so
Basically, but the consensus of the room is don't change your ways. Just take your ways somewhere else where it's
warmer.
That's not how
I expected this column to go at all. Everyone is in agreement with the bum.
Didn't say I was right.
He doesn't want to do anything or support himself. And we're like, yeah, go for it, dude.
You can't teach him to be more responsible at this point in life.
I mean, are we considering 56 a past the point of no return? Like, after 50, you're just stuck in your ways.
It's harder and harder to learn, I guess, at that age. It's not impossible, but...
John, are you a voice of reason on this thing, or are you on board?
I guess I'm on board. I don't have any other solutions for
All right, you wrote the right set of fellas, boys, because you are free to homeless it up in Honolulu. Sounds like we'll throw some money down, seeing that you don't have any. It says, let's see, Secular says, your problem is you have lost faith in yourself. Yeah, that's the problem. Couldn't be the fact that you can't keep a job going because you're lazy. If you have had 1,000 interests and hobbies, I'm betting you are proficient in at least half of them. which means you do have a wealth of varied experiences to offer some lucky employer. Please keep that in mind the next time you go for an interview, because as long as you have the determination, it is never too late.
Just like we said.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like we call it.
You don't have the determination, so it's too late.
There's plenty of honest, good work to do out there, right? The guy could get a job doing something, but we live in a society where he's not going to get paid enough to make enough living to have a home, you know, and to have a retirement and to prepare for what's going to come in 10 years.
No, actually, okay. So it's slightly altering your advice then. Don't go to Honolulu. Go to like a poorer country.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Go to Mexico.
Yeah. Go move to Central America or something. Somewhere where the standard of living isn't as high.
Because he's in a trap. You know, yeah. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying there's at that age.
I am blaming him.
Well, okay. I'm just trying to be nice. I'm trying to be the interview when a guy comes in. All I've had is entry level jobs, and I'm 56. Do you want to hire me? I'm like, well, I got an entry level job. Yep. But I'm not gonna. It's not gonna pay him enough to do what he needs.
Yeah,
we're gonna have healthcare issues coming up in the years to come.
Get another entry level job for maybe a year or two. Save up some money. Go to a place that has government healthcare and take your savings with you and live in a third world country and be fine.
Yeah.
New York City actually raised their minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but there's no way he could afford rent in
New York. Yeah, you can't live in New York.
That is a problem.
Yeah, he'd be homeless.
Yeah. You can't get a closet for less than $2,000 a month.
And the unintended consequence there is people are starting to reduce their hours because it disqualified them for their social benefits. Yeah. So they're like, oh, no.
Welfare.
So, yeah, they're cutting their hours.
Hey, that means there's hours available in New York and Seattle.
Here you go.
Send them. All right. All right, so here's the story. Two girls outed...
I'm disgusted by you guys. Go ahead, finish up.
Wait, Mike, what's your advice to this guy?
I think he should just stay where he's at and be disappointed in himself.
Mike's advice is basically you have a right understanding of your circumstance.
You've seen your life correctly. Now swim in that pool until you decide to get out because it's cold.
Do you think the guy's actually going to move?
No,
if we gave him the advice, hey, why don't you go find a beach and enjoy yourself? Do you think he's really going
to
move?
He'd probably take a job as a stewardess for just a week until he got to Honolulu, and then he'd just get off the plane. I'm here.
I think he might hitchhike.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm sorry, Ben, go ahead.
All right.
Did we hear secular?
Right.
Yeah, we gave secular's advice.
Yeah. Secular said something about faith.
She boistered up his self-esteem.
Oh, right.
Says, you really are worth something.
I was so underimpressed, I forgot.
With all those hobbies.
Yeah, you got plenty of knowledge with all the stuff you do for money.
Here's a question. What do you think Jesus would say to a guy like this?
Follow me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to Honolulu? No, New Jersey. No, I'll stay. No. I'm good.
Well, okay, so to that answer, though, does it behoove? I mean, I suppose he doesn't know anybody else, right? But like... should a church be picking up that guy and pointing him in the right direction?
Should a church be picking up that guy?
Yeah.
That was your question?
Yeah.
In what sense do you mean picking up that guy?
I don't know. It's a good question, actually. What responsibility do you have for someone you know is making choices like that in his life?
I don't have any financial responsibility to them.
Agreed.
If that's what you're asking.
So, but are we assuming that no one is tempted to try to help him alter his ways?
I don't know.
It doesn't really say.
I don't know that his ways exactly need to be altered.
He seems he's not in a good space in his mind.
No, maybe
it's not healthy.
But
if he can make peace with just this is who I am and this is how I've been living my life and this is how I'm going to be living my life, he can still at least dedicate it to God.
So this is what Herrick's saying, and like there is some truth to this, right? Like some people, like the general consensus is like. You get yourself a good job, you work at it, you save for retirement, you live, comfortably after you retire, and that's what your life looks like, right? And there's some people, they just don't make money that way. They about three or four jobs a year, they kind of drift around, they sleep wherever they want, and sometimes they hate it, and it's terrible, but most of the time, that's how they choose to live. They're just not the long-haul kind of guys, you know? And, like, I guess I'm kind of coming around that maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with it. It would make me nervous. But, like, there is a certain amount of freedom that they can quit a job and it doesn't devastate them, right? Like, if I lose my job, it's not just me that's affected. It's me plus three other people. Mm-hmm. And it's a disaster at my house.
Yeah.
But, like, this guy, you know, if he's called to do something funky, they say, look, we need you to... Jesus or not, but like, you know, let's say he gets it on his heart. God says, I need you to help with this thing in New Jersey. And he's like, no problem. I can literally be packed up and out of here in like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great.
And that is a different lifestyle that, like, on the onset is offensive to me. But really, I mean, it does have some inherent value if you can own it. But, like, right now he's not owning it, right? He's acting like he's confused on what he's doing. Like, if you're going to be a drifter, just be a drifter.
Be a drifter, yeah.
Be a sold-out drifter. Don't come to me like, hey, I don't have any money. It's because you're a drifter. That's why. It's just like why I don't say, hey, I'm so mad because I can't at the drop of a hat, sell my house and pack up my car and be gone in 10 minutes. Because I'm not a drifter. I don't have any reason to complain about that. That ain't me.
Uh-huh.
So,
and that's the thing. The world hates drifters because they have no responsibility. They really have no value add to them. But God loves drifters. I mean, he can do amazing things with drifters. He calls out Abraham, even, you know, 75 years old, and says, hey, I need you to drift over here for me. And so, you know, Abraham packs up his, I guess, wife and no kids at the time.
Yeah.
And he drifts.
And actually, he never stops being a drifter. And he starts moving a massive camp around.
Yeah.
Where I would say, this house is not moving. My car is not moving. I have roots here. Abraham goes, put it on wheels. We're taking it out.
You know, if he can make peace with himself and God can help him do that and he can see how God loves him, I mean, he can do some awesome things for the kingdom.
Yeah.
He's got a wealth of background in terms of interests and what he can do.
And people.
Yeah, and people.
He probably knows all
known.
Kinds of people. You know what? I never thought about this, but I think his answer is Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Faith in Jesus.
I imagine there's a lot of people that...
I'm not sure how we didn't come to this first point.
All right. Eisenhower said, follow me. He nailed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Touche, Bob.
We need more Bob on the show.
Yeah,
I think.
Right.
Someone sent out a tweet before the show and was excited and wanted more Bob. They said, bring on Bob.
Yeah.
Bob coming on. They were jazzed.
All right.
When two sisters decided to take in an Atlanta Braves game last week, they didn't expect to be making headlines or potentially splitting up a longtime married couple. While watching the game, Delana and Bryn Henson noticed that the woman sitting in front of them was secretly sexting someone, despite the fact that she was at a game with her husband of 29 years. The social media savvy sisters took pictures of the text, which were allegedly to a man named Mark Allen, but were saved in her phone under the name Nancy, and posted them on Twitter for the world to see.
Smooth.
Let's see. I won't read the text, but they're not, yeah. Anyway, it said, within days, Henson's photo-filled tweet was retweeted more than 20,000 times. After sharing the pictures on social media, the sisters then decided to tell the husband about his wife's extracurricular activities before they left the stadium. And they basically wrote on one of the programs, your wife is cheating on you. Look at her messages under the name Nancy.
Huh.
And so it said, the note read, here we go. Your wife is cheating on you. Look at the messages under Nancy. It's really a man named Mark Allen. There are pictures on my phone. She has deleted the messages. And then she gave their phone numbers. Sorry, just thought you should know. They were then able to sneak the note to the man as they left the stadium. According to Twitter, he stopped walking and gave them a thumbs up.
Wow. That's a response.
This is why I'm holding on to potentially this is Dan's item. The unidentified man reportedly contacted the girls later that day to obtain more information about his spouse's potential infidelity. Delana told Metro.co.uk that she hasn't heard from him after sending him the pictures, telling the paper, I don't think he's confronted her yet. I want to ask him, but it's not my place. She added that based on their conversation, the man seemed happy that the girls brought their wife's alleged infidelity to his attention, saying he was appreciative, we told him. Probably not so much that it's on the internet, but we never thought it would blow up like this. And then there's a response that says not everyone was appreciative, and they were upset that the Henson sisters did this. They said they didn't think they did the right thing. So what do you do in that situation? Appropriate to point this out and share it with the man?
Ooh.
Well, she's doing it publicly enough that the people around her saw what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
That's pretty snoopy, though.
Yeah, yep. Hey, man, same thing can happen just about every bar you go to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can see the exact same thing.
Really?
How can they get that close to read this girl's text and take pictures of it?
I think they were, you know, had the phone out and they zoomed in. And they got it's a little fuzzy, but you can kind of tell what they're
pretty
up to.
Close, though.
I
was at a Royals game this last week, and it was just kind of like, you're just kind of in their hair, yeah. You know. Yeah, it's,
they were cheap seats tied together.
When their head is right next to your knee, it's like, you know, they're sitting there.
So are you saying that they didn't overstep the lines in basically eavesdropping on what was going on? They it had been thrust upon them.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You still have to be looking over someone's shoulder, checking out their text message.
Yeah. But it's in full view. I mean,
it's not my fault I read fast.
Go to the bathroom and do it there.
I didn't mean to do it.
But it's a long baseball game, and what else are you going to look at? So, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Hot dogs.
It's not like there's action in baseball. It's pretty boring.
Tricky.
Oh, that is tricky.
I haven't been to a major league ball game. That'd be fun. Anyway, maybe I could get on a nip.
We'll Dutch treat it live from the past.
So, I mean, is it
what's the question, Ben?
They shouldn't have been looking. Let's call it that. All right. But now that they have looked, do they have responsibility to share the information with the man that's next to her?
They shouldn't have tweeted it. Tweeted.
I'm hip.
They shouldn't have got on the Twitter.
The tweeter.
Man.
I would want to know.
I would want to know. I don't think I would do it if I were those girls. Yeah, I think I would
that's
just...
That's what I'm saying.
The less drama in my life, the better. So if I could steer clear of their drama in, drama yeah, for me, right, the better.
That's the point, right? Is God still on the throne? Yeah. I don't need to tweet this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, the question is like, is it your place to get involved? Actually, I think I'm going to answer no. Like, as much as I'd like to see some bad stuff stop, whatever helpfulness I had as a drive-by morality police in that situation, it just doesn't seem that it's going to be of any good.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it, but I would feel terrible.
I'm not sure how you guys would want to know but not want to be someone who would communicate it. That's what I'm having trouble with right there. You would appreciate someone informing you. You just don't want to be a person who informs of that, and that's what I'm having trouble with.
Yeah, kind of like I would like to promote a man to be a homeless vagabond in Honolulu, but I would not be comfortable doing it myself.
Oh, I'd do it.
I'm half there.
I think I stay out of it, but I think that's more a reflection of my personality, not necessarily that it's the right or wrong thing to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just, that's my natural tendency to steer, you know, keep my nose out of somebody's business if I can at all help it. I mean, if that's a friend of mine right in front of me or, you know, my sister or my brother or somebody I know and I know the situation and I see these people all the time, that's a different story. But it's a perfect stranger or it's a stranger, I'm assuming. I don't know what those two relationship is. You know, maybe they're always bringing in other people into the relationships and
you never know.
But that's neither here nor there. That's just, like you said, that's more, you know, my personality and my instinct, which is I'm just going to steer clear. That's their business. It's not mine. I feel bad for those two, but I'm out of it.
Here,
I guess it's more or less the same issue as seeing like two people making out. One of them's wearing a wedding ring and the other one's not. I'm not going to take a picture of that and or even try and confront or fix it myself. It's like, if I don't know the people, there's not much that I can do sitting from where I am.
Right. It's not like you have, even if you bring it up, you don't have any level of influence in their life that you're going to positively impact that circumstance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, tricky. All right. So we stay out of it. Mm-hmm. Boy, it sounds like Bob would say it, though, if you were close to him, so... John, if you're going to be sending text during the ball game, you make sure they're clean. Bob will bring it up.
That's right.
Need bomb shelter ASAP.
We got big trouble.
Let's meet at the bomb shelter tonight. Don't tell my wife.
Anybody with bomb shelter in Waukee area? PM with details. I want John's life. all right, here's what we're going to have to do. The night rolls on, boys. And we got through most of those articles.
No, so, we didn't.
Yeah, I did. We got through like three, half of one and a couple.
Yeah, okay.
We got more. We can get to them. Anyway, hey, big thanks.
We didn't get to the Ashley Madison thing from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Isn't that more or less the same issue, though?
Nah, it probably is.
Yeah. All
right.
Yeah. Maybe I'll bring it up next week. We'll talk about it. All right.
We'll just do the same show every week.
Oh, yeah, that seems all right. As always, big thanks to Bob and John Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for if you're interested in buying or selling a home. These are just the fellows to deal with you. I promise. Keep an eye out. We'll do a Twitter announcement on the next Live from the Path buffet night. We're targeting within the next 2 weeks, we will pick a place and a date.
Okay.
We probably won't be within the next 2 weeks, like the actual event, but we'll pick a place and a date, give you time to prepare, clear your calendar, come out for that stuff. And if you want to listen to more from the show, go to livefromthepath.org. You can catch past clips from the show, artist performances. For Everland, there's some acoustic stuff that they did that's really cool. It's out there. And they're climbing the charts, man.
Yeah, I saw that.
Things are going really well for them. Also, there's some acoustic stuff from Silverside when they were in. And Josh Crawford and Driven 11, Dominic with Driven 11. Just a lot of cool folks coming in the studio lately. So go out and check those things out. Give those guys some support. And as always, be faithful to the means. Let God handle the ends. Thank you for listening to Live from the Path.